JBL wireless earbuds are for those who are the first to try something unique. The first wireless earbuds on the market with a touchscreen case, which allows you to control your audio without reaching for your phone. They also have a touchscreen smart charging case for one-touch control. I love being able to touch my buds and control the volume. With a built-in wireless transmitter that lets you plug and play with any device you want, JBL wireless earbuds connects you to all your favorite music, movies, and games. JBL wireless earbuds. Grab a pair at JBL.com.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores. Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
'Tis the season for identity theft. This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But guess what? Identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss by yourself, even if you keep an eye on your bank and credit card statements. If your identity is stolen, your own U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. And all plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. The last thing you want to do this holiday season is face drained accounts, fraudulent loans, or other financial losses from identity theft all alone. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART. Or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This is Hidden Killers Year in Review. A look back at the biggest stories of 2025. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
In a courtroom in Leon County this March, something unusual happened. Donna Adelson's defense team returned to court. Not to argue about evidence found on the phone or wiretaps or any of the expected stuff in the murder-for-hire case that we've become all too familiar with, but to make a renowned and renewed plea to keep a novel out of her upcoming trial. Yes, a novel, a work of fiction, right? Or is it? A book called This Is Our Story, written by her daughter, you guessed it, Wendy Adelson. A book that prosecution says paints a picture of not just of Wendy's state of mind, but of Donna's own alleged motive in the killing of her former son-in-law, Dan Markell. Pretty big allegation right there. It's not every day that a murder case turns into the pages of a novel, but here we are. Now, this is our story isn't some obscure diary or private journal that was accidentally uncovered. No, it was actually published in 2011, 3 years before Markell's 2014 shooting, and marketed as a semi-autobiographical debut from a young lawyer turned author who at the time was also Markell's ex-wife. And for the last decade, it sat relatively unnoticed. But as prosecutors built out the picture of what they say was a family conspiracy to get rid of Dan Markell, they zeroed in on this book. Because in the eyes of the state, This Is Our Story is more than fiction. It's a map of motive. But how so? Donna Adelson's attorneys are now fighting hard to keep the book far away from the courtroom. They're doing so for a reason. Once you hear what's inside it and how closely it lines up with real life events, you'll understand why. Let's back up a bit, though. On March 27th, 2025, in Tallahassee, the courtroom, defense attorneys for Donna Adelson stood before Judge Stephen Everett and asked him for the second time to rule that the jury should never see or hear about This Is Our Story. They argued that it's fiction, that it's irrelevant, and that it was written and published in 2011, long before the events. Yeah. They argued it has nothing to do with Donna Adelson. And most importantly, they argued that if the jury hears it, they might get confused, or worse, start seeing metaphors as a motive. So to be fair, these aren't outlandish arguments. In most trials, fiction doesn't get to testify. Defense attorney Marissa Vickers told the court that the book closely resembles parts of Wendy Adelson's life. Sure, but also noted that parts of it diverge significantly. For example, there's a line in the book where the main character, Lily, thanks her husband for bringing her to North Florida. A direct contradiction, Vickers argued, that the prosecution's theory that Wendy felt trapped in Tallahassee and she was desperate to leave. And the book doesn't quite say that. It just says it in different areas. But the state sees it a little differently. Prosecutors say this book isn't about plot lines or metaphors. It's about what it reveals. Plainly about how Wendy Adelson felt during her marriage, how she viewed her husband, how she viewed her life in North Florida, and how when she wrote fiction, she imagined a future without her husband and on her own terms. While Wendy is not on trial this round, her mother Donna is. And prosecutors argue that understanding Wendy's mindset helps establish the alleged motive behind what they claim was a family operation to have Dan Markell killed. So who's right? And why is the book such a big deal? Let's talk about timing. This isn't a newly discovered manuscript. Like I said, the book was originally self-published in 2011, then picked up and re-released by Carolina Academic Press in 2013, about a year before Dan Markell was shot in his driveway, allegedly by hitmen connected to Wendy's brother, Charlie Adelson. So from a purely chronological standpoint, the defense is right. The book came out before the murder. The prosecutors say that's exactly why it matters. Because they're not saying the book caused anything. They're saying it reveals quite a bit. According to court records and public statements, the state believes the book serves as a kind of prelude, a window into Wendy's frustration with her marriage and her life, and a signal to her family that she wanted out. More than out, she wanted a clean slate. The book doesn't describe a murder, but it does describe a woman who, by the end of the story, has completely cut her husband out of her life, adopted a baby without his input, given the baby her maiden name, and told her husband to stay away. It is fiction, yes, but it also hits a little too close to home. What makes all this more complicated is how the prosecution wants to use the book. They don't intend to introduce it as some kind of confession. They're not saying this book is the murder plot disguised as literature. Instead, they say it offers that rare, unfiltered look into how Wendy Adelson viewed her world, and more specifically, how she viewed her ex-husband, Dan Markell. They believe that Wendy's outlook, as expressed in the novel, helps illustrate why the Adelson family might have wanted Dan out of the picture. And since Donna is now accused of orchestrating the murder-for-hire plot, they say Wendy's mindset helps explain Donna's motivation. It's all about building the frame. And the book, they say, is part of that frame. So back in court this March, Donna Adelson's legal team didn't argue that the book was fiction. They also tried to pick apart its relevance. They claim that any connection between the book and the crime is completely circumstantial, speculative, and prejudicial. In plain English, it might sound spooky, but it doesn't prove anything. And letting jurors hear about it would be unfair. That argument already lost once. In September of 24, Judge Everett denied an earlier motion to exclude the book, siding with prosecutors who argued that it had enough probative value to be considered. But Donna has new counsel now, and they're hoping the judge will reconsider, especially after they emphasize the new details, like the fact that the book was published well before the custody battles and relocation fights that are central to the alleged motives in this case. They're also leaning heavily on the idea that the book's fictional plot lines are too distant from the facts. Wendy's character in the book, Lily, if you want to call her Wendy's character, is married to a man named Josh, not Dan. Big changes there. Lily is working on immigration and human trafficking cases, completely unrelated to the world of custody disputes. And as mentioned earlier, there's that detail where Lily thanks her husband for moving her to Florida, an awkward contradiction to the real-life picture of Wendy as someone who desperately wanted to leave. But here's the thing. In criminal trials, it's not always about proving every single fact lines up. Sometimes it's about tone. It's about patterns, about the things that don't sit right. And that's what the prosecution is leaning into. They say the similarities between the book and Wendy's life are way too strong to ignore. They believe it lays out an emotional roadmap where not a crime, but a motive that Donna Adelson may have shared, encouraged, or maybe even acted on. Of course, none of this has been decided yet. Judge Everett has not ruled as of this moment on the renewed motion, but in court he made it clear he's weighing both sides carefully, because what's really at stake here isn't just whether a book gets read aloud in court, it's whether that book will be allowed to shape how a jury understands one of the most unusual murder cases in recent memory. There's a tension here that's hard to ignore. On one hand, we're talking about a fictional story, a novel, the kind you could buy online, read on a plane, and forget about a week later. On the other hand, this novel might be doing the very thing that Donna Adelson's defense fears worst, speaking for Wendy, giving jurors a glimpse into Wendy's thoughts and emotions that Donna's lawyers can't cross-examine, can't fact-check, and can't fully control. It's like trying to put a character on the stand, but the character was created by the defendant's own daughter, and she sounds an awful lot like the real Wendy. And remember, Wendy Adelson is expected to testify in her mother's trial, so this novel could become a kind of shadow witness lurking in the background, echoing the words that she says, or worse, contradicting it. That's why the defense is fighting so hard to keep it out. They know the power of the narrative. They know that sometimes, especially with juries, narrative wins. The prosecution, for their part, seems well aware of the risks, too. They've been careful in how they discuss the book, acknowledging that it is fiction, but insisting that its value lies in what it shows about motive, not facts. They've hinted that this may be something where they only seek to introduce excerpts, just like very specific passages from the book, not the novel as a whole. Well, that could also be enough to get the past judges' concerns about confusion and prejudice a little more weight. And if even a few lines from the book make it in front of the jury, that could be enough to leave a lasting impression. So, as we wait for Judge Everett's ruling, the courtroom is holding its breath. A fictional story about a woman finding independence may soon become a pivotal piece of a real murder trial. Whether it's admitted or excluded, this is our story, is already shaping how the story is being told. The big question is, what exactly does this book say? And how close does fiction come to fact? This Is Our Story isn't a courtroom exhibit. It's that novel, one, again, at face value, appears to be about human trafficking. But beneath that surface, just a few pages in, it becomes something else entirely. A portrait, a memoir, a fiction so tightly stitched to real life that it feels like a rough draft of reality. Again, the book first published in 2011. Wendy Adelson, then a young lawyer with academic ambitions, released it as her debut novel. Didn't exactly make waves at the time. No bestseller list, and I think the last time I checked it on Amazon, it had like 5 reviews. Just a quiet release with a striking cover and a summary about immigration, legal advocacy, and a young attorney's fight for justice. But those who actually read it, especially now with the benefit of hindsight, see something very different. Again, at the center of the story is Lily Stone. She's 30-something, bright, idealistic, and recently married. She gives up a high-powered job in Washington, D.C., and follows her husband, Josh Stone, to a small university town in North Florida called Hiawassee Springs. You don't need a map to know that's code for Tallahassee. It's like you just kind of rearrange some of the letters and you get that. In North Florida? University town? Yeah. It's not exactly subtle. As soon as Lily arrives, she hates it. The house Josh has picked is a mess, roach-infested, dirty. A far cry from the life she imagined. And her career stalls. She struggles to find purpose. And her marriage? It starts to curdle almost immediately. Josh is pinned as a well-meaning but small person, both literally and figuratively. Lily complains about his pet names, his habits, and his general presence. The more time she spends in Hiawassee Springs, the more she feels boxed in, like she's living someone else's life, Josh's life. So she starts to create her own. Lily throws herself into pro bono immigration work, eventually taking on the cases of two young women, Mila and Rosa, who've been trafficked into the United States under the false promise and brutal conditions. Their stories full of abuse and coercion make up much of the plot's external conflict, but while those cases are meant to provide some sort of structure, the emotional heartbeat of the novel is always about Lily. It's about her internal war between obligation and freedom, identity and family, her husband's version of her future, and the one she wants for herself. And slowly but surely, Lily begins to sever the ties. There's no single moment where Lily flips a switch. It's a slow burn, a mounting frustration that simmers into resolve. Her relationship with Josh deteriorates in every single chapter. There are cold dinners, missed signals, hostile sentences, and eventually Lily takes a step that changes everything. She adopts a baby without telling Josh. The baby, born to one of the trafficking victims, becomes the center of Lily's new world. She names the child Anna, gives her Lily's last name, Walker, her maiden name, not Josh's, not Stone. And when she finally tells Josh about the adoption, she doesn't ask for his opinion. She tells him flat out that she wants to raise a child on her own, that her life is going to be a different direction, that he isn't a part of it anymore. Josh cries, pleads, but Lily is firm. She's moving on. She's taking back her name, too, planning to revert to Walker after the divorce is final. The last time we see them together, they're sitting across from each other in a diner. He's broken. She's resolute. The message is clear. This isn't a partnership anymore. It's a clean break. Now, pause there for a second. The last name thing? That's not just a story beat. In real life, after Dan Markell's murder, Wendy Adelson filed to change her name and her children's last names from Markell to Adelson. She even removed a middle name that had honored one of Dan's relatives. She did it within a year of his death. Just like Lily, Wendy created a new narrative, one where the father was no longer a part of the picture. Not dead, just not part of the picture. The parallels don't stop at the names. Lily's disdain for her life in Hiawassee Springs is a constant refrain in the book. She calls it a godforsaken place, complains about the bugs, the small-town culture, the isolation. It's hard not to hear echoes of real-world discontent. According to communications obtained by investigators, Wendy herself expressed frustration in the life that she was living in Tallahassee. She wanted to move back to South Florida, closer to her family, closer to Donna. But Dan wouldn't agree to the relocation. The court said no, so she stayed for a time. Back in the book, Josh isn't physically abusive. He's not a villain. He's just in the way. The obstacle to Lily's new beginning and the way she removes him is clean, legally, emotionally, surgically. She builds a new family unit around herself and her adopted daughter with no room left for the man she once married. Again, all fiction, sure. But when you read it alongside the facts, the tone gets harder to ignore. Because a trafficking storyline, that's not the part people remember. That's not the part that gets prosecutors and defense attorneys lining up in court to argue over admissibility. It's the undercurrent, the personal narrative, the way Lily, and by extension, Wendy, writes about control, about escape, about reshaping her life, her family, her future, on her terms, without the man who tied her down. That's what prosecutors say matters, not the plot about immigration, visas, or corrupt traffickers, but the voice behind it, a woman who is clearly and unapologetically using fiction to work something out, to say the things she maybe couldn't say out loud, to imagine a life without her husband, a life she ultimately creates both in the book and, according to the prosecution, in reality. Wendy has never denied that book draws from her real life. She's described it as semi-autobiographical. And it doesn't take a literary scholar to figure out which parts come from experience. The setting, the dynamics, the marriage, even the character names, Lily Stone, Josh Stone, carry that familiar ring. She may not be Lily in every detail, but she's Lily where it counts. And in the book, Lily gets what she wants. A life of independence, a daughter to raise, a future on her terms. Josh, for all his tears, fades into the background. Conveniently, right? In real life, Wendy eventually got something that looked very similar. Two children, a return to South Florida, and no more Dan Markell in the picture. The road to that ending was much darker. Markell was shot in his driveway in July of 2014. Police say the murder was a murder-for-hire plot, and Wendy, while never charged, was surrounded by family members who allegedly played a part. Her brother Charlie, now convicted. Her mother Donna, awaiting trial. In court findings, prosecutors argue that This Is Our Story gives them a crucial tool to explain motive. Not Wendy's alone, but the family's. They believe the book shows that Wendy wanted and that her family, particularly Donna, helped her get what she wanted. But the defense pushes back hard. They say that it's a novel, again, it's not a roadmap, that any parallels are purely coincidental. The story was written before the murders, before the custody battle, before the relocation denials. They say the book is being twisted into something it's not, evidence. And maybe that's true. Maybe it is a fictional character's journey, and it shouldn't be used to explain real-life actions. But then again, when fiction looks this familiar, it's hard not to look closer. Because even if Lily isn't Wendy and Josh isn't Dan, the emotional shape of the story still fits. Woman who wants a different life, a man who won't bend, a family reshaped around the absence of its father. In the book, it's tidy, neat, paperwork and conversation. In real life, it was anything but. Still, the bones of the story are the same. Whether or not this novel makes it into court, it's already made its way into the narrative. It's become part of the broader story about control, about motive, and about a family that is going to do what they want. Their dynamic, very similar. And that prosecutors say turned deadly. While the trafficking plot might be what, again, sells the book, it's the domestic subplot. The resentment. The reinvention. The erasure. That is everyone's attention. Let's take a look at the courtroom, though. What could possibly happen there? And prosecutors, if they are able to, take it in and prove some points with it. How they plan to use it, what legal doors it opens, and what ones it threatens to slam shut. And what happens when a jury is asked to decide how much truth they believe can live inside a piece of fiction? So when it comes down to it, a murder trial is about story, not fiction, not novels, but the story that the prosecution can prove and the one the defense can dismantle. And in the case against Donna Adelson, the prosecution believes they've got a piece of that story sitting between the covers of her daughter's book. They're not arguing that this is our story is a confession. They're not suggesting it's the how-to manual. But what they are saying clearly and deliberately is that the novel offers that rare look into a life and Wendy Adelson's mindset. And that mindset, they say, you can begin to understand Donna Adelson's alleged motive. Here's the crux of it, the motive, the why. Because the evidence against Donna isn't based on DNA or surveillance footage. The case is built on relationships, resentment, and what prosecutors describe as deep and shared desire to remove a man, Dan Markell, from the lives of a family that felt boxed in by him. What better way to show that collective desire, they argued, than through the words of Wendy herself that she wrote years before? They plan to use the book to do two things, illustrate Wendy's motive and to frame Donna's intent. It's not a one-to-one correlation. Wendy isn't on trial yet. She's never been charged. But the prosecutors believe that Donna, as Wendy's mother, would have understood that her daughter's frustrations were real. And more than that, would have taken action to help fix the problem. If Wendy felt stuck in Tallahassee, unable to move her children back to Miami and trapped in the shadow of her ex-husband, then Donna, the state says, had every reason to want Dan out of the way. It's a theory built not on one smoking gun, but again, on 1,000 slow-burning details. The This Is Us story, they say, is one of those details. That's why they're pushing to bring it into the courtroom, not to prove that Wendy fantasized about murder, but to show how badly she wanted to erase Dan from her family's life. And if Donna shared that motive or acted on it, then the book becomes relevant not as fact, but as emotional context, if you will, a glimpse into the family's private narrative, one that ended with a public killing. The legal mechanism for introducing this kind of evidence is tricky. Fiction doesn't usually get a seat at the table at a murder trial, but the prosecution has a play here, and it hinges on something called the state of mind exception to hearsay. Normally, anything someone says outside of court, especially in writing, is considered hearsay. It can't be used to prove the truth of what it says. But if the statement reflects the speaker's emotional state, that emotional state is relevant to the case, then it can come in. So the prosecutors aren't arguing that anything in the book happened the way it's written. They're saying that the book, again, reveals how Wendy felt. It shows her resentment, her restlessness, her need to start fresh, and her desire to do it without her husband. And if Donna knew that and acted with that in mind, again, then the book puts that picture together of that family-wide conspiracy. Now, not everyone agrees this is fair play. Legal experts are divided on it. Some say it's clever, a little unorthodox. Others say it is trial by metaphor, warning that introducing fiction into a criminal trial sets a dangerous precedent, because even if the judge reminds the jury that the book is not fact, once it's in their heads, it's in. Jurors are human. They react to narrative. If they see Wendy as this woman, desperate to escape her ex, then they learn that Dan Markell was murdered. It's not a stretch to connect the dots emotionally, even if the evidence doesn't connect them legally. That's the defense's concern, that the jury will latch onto that story, not the evidence. That they'll be swayed by tone, suggestion, by the eerie coincidences in arts mirroring life. The risk isn't just confusion, it's prejudice. The idea that Wendy wrote the ending she wanted, and that the ending actually happened, although there was no murder in the book. So the judge has options. He can allow the book in full or in part. He can restrict it to certain excerpts. He can provide strict instructions to the jury, laying out exactly what the book can be considered for and what it can't. Or he can exclude it altogether, deciding that the risk of unfair influence outweighs any potential value. And make no mistake here, if it comes in, it will be controlled. Trafficking subplot, irrelevant. The focus will be on the marriage, the adoption, the name changes, the emotional pivot where Lily cuts her husband out of the picture. Those are the lines prosecutors want the jury to hear. Public commentary, especially from the true crime world, has been a little less reserved. People who followed this case for years have pored over the This Is Us story, finding every line, every turn of the phrase that seems to echo what happened after Dan Markell's murder. The online community is filled with posts describing the novel as a chilling and unsettling, a window into motive. Legal bloggers have unpacked the parallels, noting how Wendy's fiction is so closely on track with the aftermath of Dan's death, particularly her swift moves to change the children's names and several ties after the Markell family. But it's not just about the public buzz. The legal implications are real. The book, if it is admitted, gives the prosecution a unique edge, the ability to argue motive not with just witness statements or emails, but with Wendy's own words. Even though Wendy is not coerced, not charged, her testimony is expected to be central in this case. She's not a peripheral player. She's the bridge between Donna and Dan. The entire narrative hinges on what she knew, what she felt, and what her family allegedly did on her behalf. So imagine her on the stand, answering questions about her relationship with Dan, about her life in Tallahassee, about her feelings during the custody fight. Then imagine the prosecution pulling out the book, not to accuse her of writing a confession, couldn't have happened before, but to point to how she wrote about those feelings in fiction, to ask the jury, is this really fiction? Or is this the blueprint of a motive? Or is this just someone trying to struggle with their feelings and work through them in a book, and her family takes it too far? That's the knife's edge that this trial is walking. Because once motive enters a room, it colors everything. And when motive is painted in story form, it sticks. Donna's team is going to continue to push back with everything they have. They'll argue that Wendy's mindset, no matter how vividly she wrote it, is not Donna's mindset. That what a daughter wants doesn't prove what a mother did or even wanted. And they'll argue that fiction is just that, fiction. Even if it walks the line of truth and talks like the truth, it's not evidence unless the law says it is. And they may have a point. Judges tend to be cautious with anything that risks emotional contamination in the courtroom. Fiction has weight, but not always the right kind. If jurors start reading between the lines, it becomes less about facts and more about feelings. And in a trial where the facts are already circumstantial, that's dangerous ground. Still, the prosecution seems to believe the risk is worth it, because what they're really doing is building a mosaic, a pattern, a picture of a family whose frustration boiled over into action. And in that mosaic, the This Is Us story was just one title, but a vivid one. Whether, again, it is omitted or not, it has certainly started to shape how people view this case. And if the jury hears even a few lines of it, that emotional echo could be powerful. That's the prosecution's gamble, that fiction can sometimes reveal truth more clearly than fact. But the final word belongs to the judge. And if he allows it in, if it finds a way into evidence, into testimony, in the minds of those jurors, there could be some swaying going on. Only time will tell if Wendy's book makes an impact on the future freedom of her mom, Donna Adelson, and even possibly herself. There's a lot of questions in this case. We just have to keep waiting for the answers.
Want to stay on top of the latest true crime cases? Press subscribe now and never miss a breaking update from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Donna Adelson.
It's not every day you see a 70-something grandmother trying to get a murder trial judge kicked off her case. But then again, this isn't your average grandmother, and this definitely isn't your average trial. Donna Adelson, the matriarch at the center of a murder-for-hire conspiracy nearly a decade in the making, is locked in a legal battle that's finally heading to trial. But in April 2025, just weeks before she's set to face a jury, her legal team made one last dramatic push to shake up the game by trying to disqualify the judge presiding over the entire case. So let's be clear. This wasn't some procedural formality. Donna's defense didn't quietly file a motion and move on. No, they filed the legal equivalent of slamming the brakes on the whole trial and yelling, "We want a new driver." Judge Stephen Everett has been overseeing this case and, by all public accounts, doing so with a pretty even hand. But after a series of rulings that didn't go their way, most notably his comments about possibly allowing certain evidence to be used against them, Donna's lawyers decided to go after the man with the gavel. The exact details of the motion were sealed, but the playbook here isn't hard to read. They likely argued the judge was biased or had created the appearance of bias, legal buzzwords used when you want to suggest the referee's wearing the other team's jersey. And while Florida law does allow for disqualification under certain conditions, it's a tough sell. The standard is high. The motion has to show a well-founded fear that the judge can't be impartial. It's not code for, "We don't like your rulings." It means something more like, "Your Honor has a personal stake in this or has said something so prejudicial, no reasonable person would believe we're getting a fair shake." And Judge Everett didn't buy it, not the first time, not the second time. Donna's team filed an amended version of the motion after the first was rejected, kind of like saying, "No, okay, how about now?" And he still said no. There was no detailed explanation, no courtroom theatrics, no long-winded opinion, just a judicial equivalent of, "Nice try, let's move on." That's how April started for Donna Adelson, by losing what was probably her boldest attempt to reset the game. But the defense wasn't done swinging. A motion to disqualify the judge is one thing. The next logical step when you're up against the wall is to buy more time. So they filed a motion for continuance, asking the court to delay the June 3rd trial. Now, unlike the disqualification attempt, this one actually has a decent shot at success, at least procedurally. The defense says it needs more time to prepare, citing the massive scope of discovery. We're talking tens of thousands of pages, including over 80,000 emails that were only recently turned over. That's not just a lot of reading. It's a digital haystack, and they're looking for needles. Emails, call logs, court filings. It's a flood of evidence that would be hard for any team to sort through in time, let alone when your client is facing life in prison. That motion hasn't been ruled on yet. A hearing is scheduled for April 30th, and until then, the June 3rd trial date still stands. But this delay attempt came on the heels of yet another loss. The judge recently denied a motion to suppress a jailhouse call, presumably one involving Donna, that the prosecution wants to use at trial. These recorded phone calls, usually made from jail while the defendant is awaiting trial, often end up being a goldmine for prosecutors. People forget they're being recorded, they vent, they strategize, they slip up. And if you're Donna Adelson, who allegedly has a reputation for trying to control the narrative, those calls could be devastating if the jury hears them. The court's denial of the suppression motion means that whatever was said on those calls is coming in, and the prosecution intends to use it. This ruling, combined with the refusal to remove the judge, paints a pretty clear picture. The court is not entertaining procedural side quests. This trial is happening, and it's happening on schedule, unless the April 30th hearing says otherwise. Meanwhile, the broader posture of the case has shifted into full-on pre-trial warfare. Both sides are still filing motions, some sealed, some public, trying to define the rules of engagement. Discovery deadlines have been pushed back slightly, mostly to accommodate depositions, including a notable one, Charlie Adelson, Donna's son, who's already been convicted for his role in the murder, is scheduled to be deposed from prison next month. Whether he actually says anything meaningful or pleads the fifth remains to be seen. But it's clear the defense is looking to fill in gaps and prepare for any surprises. And that's what all of this really comes down to, preparing for what's next. With the judge still in place, the trial date looming, and key evidence officially admitted, the pressure is building. The defense is in a corner trying to chip away at the case from every angle they can, stalling where possible, narrowing what can be said in court, and maybe most of all, hoping to control how Donna is seen by the jury. Because this isn't just about facts. It's about framing. That's the fight unfolding in these final weeks before trial. Not who did what, but how the story gets told once the courtroom lights come on. The defense needs time to reshape Donna into a sympathetic figure, an aging mother caught in a family tragedy, not a mastermind behind a murder. The prosecution, meanwhile, is positioning her as the final piece of a calculated family conspiracy that's already taken down her son and implicated her daughter. And the clock is ticking. Whether the trial stays on the rails or gets pushed down the calendar will depend on how persuasive that April 30th hearing turns out to be. But no matter what happens, one thing is certain. The momentum is not on Donna Adelson's side. This is where things start to feel less like a legal procedure and more like psychological theater. Because before a single witness takes the stand in Donna Adelson's murder-for-hire trial, the courtroom is already hosting a quieter but no less important war. The fight over what the jury gets to hear, what they get to see, and what they're allowed to feel. And at the center of that fight is a book. Yes, a novel. Not a legal document, not an intercepted phone call, not a witness statement, but a fictional story written years ago by Donna's daughter, Wendy Adelson. The book is called This Is Our Story, and while it isn't on trial, it might as well be. Because the prosecution says this book, though technically fiction, offers a window into Wendy's mindset before Dan Markell was murdered. More importantly, they argue it reveals something about the family dynamics that fueled the entire case. Dynamics that include Donna Adelson herself. The defense naturally wants it kept far away from the courtroom. They argue it's irrelevant, it's prejudicial, it's fiction. In their eyes, using a made-up story to suggest motive in a very real murder is like trying to convict someone based on their favorite crime movie. They've gone on record saying that the character in the book isn't Wendy. The setting isn't Tallahassee, and the husband being resented isn't Dan Markle. Just a story, nothing more. But the prosecution sees it differently. They're not trying to present the book as direct evidence of anything criminal. They're not suggesting Wendy outlined the murder in the margins. What they are saying is that the book reflects the frustrations, grievances, and emotional tension that were allegedly building within the Adelson family. Specifically, the resentment Wendy may have felt being stuck in Tallahassee after the court refused to let her move to South Florida with her children, something she reportedly blamed Dan for. And here's where Donna comes in. According to prosecutors, Donna wasn't just a sympathetic ear. She was part of the problem-solving team. They point to emails and conversations in which Donna allegedly expressed similar frustrations. She wanted Wendy and the kids closer. She didn't like Tallahassee either. She viewed Dan as an obstacle. The book, in their eyes, doesn't just expose Wendy's frame of mind. It underscores a shared family outlook. It helps lay the emotional groundwork for why someone might want Dan Markell out of the picture. The legal tug of war here is all about admissibility with purpose. The judge has already hinted at how he's likely to rule. He's not going to let prosecutors read the book to the jury like it's story time. But he has said on the record that if Wendy testifies and if she says something that contradicts the emotional tone or details in the book, then it may be fair game. In legal terms, that means the novel could be used for impeachment. Not as proof that the story is true, but to challenge her credibility if she presents a sanitized version of events that doesn't align with what she's written in the past. That's a narrow window, but a powerful one. Jurors may never read the whole book, but even a few well-placed excerpts could be enough to plant doubt or spark clarity. In a trial where motive is essential but direct evidence is limited, every emotional breadcrumb matters. Especially if those breadcrumbs lead back to the family kitchen table where Donna Adelson allegedly sat, stirred the pot, and plotted alongside her children. But the book isn't the only point of contention. The fight over Wendy's novel is really just one front in a much larger evidentiary battle. The prosecution has been working to admit a range of communications, emails, voicemails, call records between Donna and other family members. They argue that this digital footprint tells a clear story, one of a close-knit family that didn't just share dinners, but also shared a deep desire to fix the custody situation. And if the state is to be believed, that fix came with fatal consequences. In these emails, Donna allegedly expresses concern not just for Wendy's well-being, but for her own access to her grandchildren. According to prosecutors, she repeatedly blames Dan for keeping the family divided and makes statements suggesting that legal remedies weren't working. On their own, these messages might sound like nothing more than venting, an upset mother-in-law grieving a custody battle gone sideways. But the state's theory is that these communications reveal a pattern, not isolated anger, but sustained pressure. And when added to the timeline leading up to Dan's murder, they argue, the context becomes damning. The defense, of course, is pushing back hard. They say the prosecution is cherry-picking phrases and painting ordinary frustrations as sinister motives. They insist that Donna was a grandmother, not a gangster, that expressing anger over custody issues doesn't mean someone is plotting murder, and that any attempt to use emotional emails or past writings to prove a criminal conspiracy is not only misleading, it's prejudicial. That's the heart of this evidentiary fight. What should the jury hear, and what can they unhear once it's out there? Because the second someone on the witness stand quotes from a novel that sounds like a diary or reads a line from an email that feels a little too loaded, that bell can't be unrung. Jurors can be told to consider it for credibility, not guilt. But the emotional impact is real, and both sides know it. So this pretrial battle isn't just about what's legally admissible. It's about controlling the courtroom narrative. The prosecution wants to show Donna Adelson as an orchestrator, someone who didn't just complain about Dan Markell, but actively sought to remove him from the equation. The defense wants to keep her in a different light entirely, an aging mother deeply involved in her family's life, but far removed from any actual planning or violence. Every email, every phone call, every literary quote becomes another brushstroke on that canvas. And that's why this chapter of the case matters so much. The jury hasn't heard a word yet, but the attorneys are already fighting tooth and nail over the soundtrack of the trial, over which themes they'll be allowed to play and which notes will be cut from the score. Because once opening statements begin, the attorneys won't just be arguing over facts, they'll be telling stories. And those stories will either cast Donna Adelson as the grieving grandmother who lost her family to tragedy, or the woman who helped orchestrate a plan to keep her family intact by any means necessary. If you really want to understand how Donna Adelson ended up at the center of one of Florida's most tangled murder-for-hire cases, you have to go back. Not to a courtroom, not to a legal filing, but to a driveway in Tallahassee, Florida, on a quiet summer morning in 2014. That's where it started. Or more accurately, that's where it all became irreversible. On July 18th of that year, Dan Markell, a 41-year-old law professor at Florida State University, pulled into his driveway after dropping his kids off at daycare. It was just after 11 a.m. He never made it inside. A gunman approached and shot him in the head through the driver's side window. He would die the next day in the hospital. The attack was precise, professional, and had all the signs of a premeditated hit. At first glance, there wasn't a clear suspect. Dan had no known enemies of the kind. you'd expect in a murder like this. He was a respected academic known for his work in criminal law and had no ties to anything remotely resembling organized crime. But investigators quickly began looking at the one part of his life that had been deeply strained in the years leading up to his murder. His relationship with his ex-wife, Wendy Adelson, and the bitter custody battle they were locked in over their two children. Wendy and Dan had divorced in 2013, and while the split itself was contentious, it was the issue of relocation that kept things boiling. Wendy wanted to move with the children to South Florida, where her family lived. Dan was adamant they stay in Tallahassee. A court sided with Dan, denying Wendy's relocation request, effectively trapping her in a city she no longer wanted to live in, with a man she no longer wanted anything to do with, except for the fact that he was her children's father. That custody decision set off what prosecutors have described as a wave of resentment and frustration inside the Adelson family. Emails, call records, and later trial testimony would point to a family that viewed Dan Markell as the root of the problem. And within that family, prosecutors allege Donna Adelson, Wendy's mother, emerged as a driving force behind what they argue was a plan to permanently resolve the issue. Now, Donna wasn't charged back then. In fact, for nearly a decade after Dan's murder, she remained on the outside of the courtroom while the case slowly unraveled around her. But what became clear over time, according to prosecutors, was that she wasn't just a concerned grandmother who got caught up in the fallout. She was, allegedly, part of the solution-seeking process. The people who were arrested first were the ones directly tied to the trigger. In 2016, 2 years after the murder, police arrested Sigfredo Garcia and Luis Rivera, both men from Miami. With prior criminal records, Rivera eventually flipped, taking a plea deal and testifying that Garcia pulled the trigger while he acted as the driver. According to Rivera, they were paid to carry out the hit, and the money came through a woman named Catherine Magbanua. Magbanua had connections to Garcia. She had children with him, but she also had a romantic relationship with Charlie Adelson, Donna's son, and Wendy's brother. Charlie was a Fort Lauderdale periodontist with no criminal record, but the connections were piling up. Prosecutors allege that Charlie provided the funding, coordinated with Magbanua, and ultimately helped arrange the hit. In 2022, Charlie was arrested and charged. He went to trial in 2023 and was convicted of first-degree murder, conspiracy to commit murder, and solicitation of murder. He was sentenced to life in prison. During that trial, the prosecution laid out their theory. Charlie acted as the middleman, Magbanua handled the payments and logistics, and Garcia and Rivera carried out the murder. The motive? To help his sister, Wendy, and relieve his mother, Donna, of the ongoing family tension stemming from the custody dispute. Which brings us back to Donna. For years, her name floated around the case as someone close to the action, but never formally accused. That changed in 2023 when she was arrested at Miami International Airport while allegedly preparing to board a one-way flight to Vietnam, a country with no extradition treaty with the United States. Authorities had been building their case for years, and by the time they moved in, they believed they had enough to finally charge her. Prosecutors say Donna's involvement wasn't just passive. They point to her communications with Charlie and Wendy in the months before and after the murder. They allege she was deeply involved in discussing the challenges of the custody battle, venting about Dan, and strategizing ways to regain family access to the children. Some of those communications, according to court filings, include comments about Dan being a problem that needed solving and repeated discussions about how much easier life would be if he were out of the picture. And it didn't stop after Dan was killed. According to the state, Donna continued to communicate with her family in ways that suggested knowledge and control. She was allegedly involved in coordinating family messaging, managing legal exposure, and in one now public call, even suggested ways to help Wendy deal with the situation emotionally and socially. The evidence prosecutors are leaning on includes years of emails, text messages, call logs, and statements collected from other defendants in the case. They're not claiming Donna pulled the trigger. They're not even claiming she arranged the payment herself. What they're saying is that she was part of a family conspiracy, that her role was just as critical as the others because she helped guide, encourage, and support the plan from behind the scenes. And from a legal standpoint, that's all it takes to be charged with conspiracy to commit murder. You don't have to be the shooter. You don't even have to be the one handing out the cash. If you knowingly agree to the plan and take any step to support or further it, you're in. Donna has pleaded not guilty. Her legal team is fighting the charges, arguing that the evidence is circumstantial and that the state is overreaching, trying to turn a messy, emotional family drama into a criminal conspiracy. They argue that Donna was a frustrated grandmother, not a criminal planner, that she may have said things in private moments of anger, but that doesn't make her complicit in a murder. But the prosecution sees it differently. They've already secured convictions against three key players, Garcia, Rivera, and Charlie Adelson. Catherine Magbanua was also convicted and sentenced to life, and now Donna is the last remaining member of the alleged conspiracy, still waiting for her day in court. She's currently being held without bond in Leon County. Her trial, at least for now, is set to begin in June 2025. And whether she stands as the architect of a family crime or the misunderstood matriarch of a fractured household, that's what the jury will soon be asked to decide.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
'Tis the season for identity theft. This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But guess what? Identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss by yourself, even if you keep an eye on your bank and credit card statements. If your identity is stolen, your own U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. And all plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. The last thing you want to do this holiday season is face drained accounts, fraudulent loans, or other financial losses from identity theft all alone. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART. Or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once, a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
'Tis the season for identity theft. This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But guess what? Identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss by yourself, even if you keep an eye on your bank and credit card statements. If your identity is stolen, your own U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. And all plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. The last thing you want to do this holiday season is face drained accounts, fraudulent loans, or other financial losses from identity theft all alone. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART. Or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Tis the season for identity theft. This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But guess what? Identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss by yourself, even if you keep an eye on your bank and credit card statements. If your identity is stolen, your own U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. And all plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. The last thing you want to do this holiday season is face drained accounts, fraudulent loans, or other financial losses from identity theft all alone. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART. Or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Tis the season for identity theft. This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But guess what? Identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss by yourself, even if you keep an eye on your bank and credit card statements. If your identity is stolen, your own U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. And all plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. The last thing you want to do this holiday season is face drained accounts, fraudulent loans, or other financial losses from identity theft all alone. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART. Or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Tis the season for identity theft. This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But guess what? Identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss by yourself, even if you keep an eye on your bank and credit card statements. If your identity is stolen, your own U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. And all plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. The last thing you want to do this holiday season is face drained accounts, fraudulent loans, or other financial losses from identity theft all alone. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART. Or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Tis the season for identity theft. This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But guess what? Identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss by yourself, even if you keep an eye on your bank and credit card statements. If your identity is stolen, your own U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. And all plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. The last thing you want to do this holiday season is face drained accounts, fraudulent loans, or other financial losses from identity theft all alone. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART. Or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
When it comes to broccoli salad, Ohio, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. Everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows that tangy zip. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip in all your favorite recipes. Buy now and get your tang on, Ohio.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at lifelock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.